Good morning and welcome to HealthWorks. I'm Carol Kanier, Community Relations Manager from Wayne Memorial Hospital. Thank you for joining us today. And on today's show, I have Dr. Meredith Hellstern. Good morning, Dr. Hellstern.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. And thank you for being on the show today. I think you're going to be one of our guests that we hear from very frequently. And I love it. You are the medical director for the Department of Pediatrics for the Wayne Memorial Community Health Centers, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And how long have you been in that role?
Almost a year, mm-hmm. But I've been in the area of practicing pediatrics now for 11 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
You've been here for 11 years?
I know.
Oh, I can't believe it.
I know.
And you have been, I will have to give you a shout out, you have been so supportive in the community events that we, you know, participate as the hospital.
Yeah.
It's just been wonderful. So thank you for everything you do for our community.
Absolutely.
You know, and especially our kiddos, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So in pediatrics, like what ages do you cover?
So it's basically birth to about college. So from the moment they leave the hospital until they go off to earn a living. So newborns until somewhere around the 18 to 21 year old mark.
Right. Yeah. And I'm sure those 21 year olds that've been here for a while don't want to leave, right?
Oh, we have several that we have to kick out the door. And they go kicking and screaming, some of them. And some of their parents are very, very adamant about them not wanting to leave too.
I'm sure because you do a wonderful job.
Thank
so,
you.
Yes. So, you know, on today's show, we are going to talk about a couple of topics, basically regarding back to school with adolescents.
Sure.
I mean, you know, we talk about infants a lot. We talk about adults, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think adolescents is a group that, you know, I think we need to do some surveys, not
mm-hmm.
surveys, but some public announcements for,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, the first thing is we talk a lot about vaccines.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially, you know, for infants and young children.
Mm-hmm.
But are there vaccinations that adolescent ages need to focus on, and what ages would those be?
Sure. So we spend a lot of time vaccinating our babies, but we a lot of times people forget that teenagers need vaccinations
mm-hmm.
too. So one of the most common times that we see kids in the office is when they're about 11 or 12 years old. And we do some vaccinations at that age, and then we see them again when they're about 16 years old to do some more vaccinations. One of the most common things that we talk about is the vaccine for meningitis. So meningitis is a pretty serious disease. It's a pretty contagious bacterial disease that can affect the brain and the spinal cord. And I think a lot of people don't think about that as much anymore, because meningitis used to be a lot more common, and there are certain types that we vaccinate for against in young children, but some of those have fallen out of favor because of the way we vaccinate young kids. But then we were seeing contagious episodes in teenagers and young adults and kids in the college arena and in military recruits and things like that, and they were getting meningitis in droves. And so meningitis is pretty serious because it can lead to inflammation in your brain and your spinal cord, and that can lead to some pretty serious permanent damage, like loss of hearing or loss of limbs or loss of limb function, and even things like death.
Wow.
And so we started vaccinating against that probably, I'd say, about 20 years ago or
mm-hmm.
so
mm-hmm.
Among our college-age students. And then now we've actually dropped it down to the middle school age that we're starting that vaccine series. So they get their first dose of that vaccine when they're about 11 or 12 years old. And then they get a second dose of that vaccine when they're about 16 years old to cover them through the rest of their high school career and then through college. And that vaccinates against a bacteria called Neisseria meningitidis. I know.
Technical name.
Right. It's a big word. And then those are the kids that are at highest risk for getting that meningitis, because they're living together in close quarters. They're sharing bathroom facilities, so that kind of thing. And that particular vaccine covers for serotypes A, C, W, and Y. I know.
I didn't know it had that many letters.
It does, right? And just to throw things into a little bit more complicated,
right?
When we started vaccinating for those types, we weren't seeing those types as much because the vaccines do their job and they do a great thing. But then we started hearing about outbreaks of a different subtype. So you may or may not have heard about outbreaks at like the University of Oregon or Penn State or, you know, down at Lehigh University, even to put it a little bit closer to home. And so there's actually a serotype called serotype B that's out there now that's becoming a little bit more common to hear about, because once you start vaccinating against one thing, then other things come up.
Right, right.
And so there's actually a vaccination now for serotype B that that we can offer. And then, so they can start getting that when they're in their teen years, to prepare them for the college years or their military recruits or anybody who may be at an increased risk of exposure. And then in the last couple of years, they sort of started to develop a combination vaccine that would have all of those serotypes together in one vaccine. So to hopefully save our teenagers some needles.
Yes, which is nice, right?
Like, which always will make them feel better, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now, you know, again, I always say I love to do these shows because I learn something new, right? Mm-hmm. Because I remember my kids are older and they all are... They're out of college, but I remember when they started college many years ago, they had to have the meningitis vaccine. And the guidelines now, again, are earlier, which is incredible. Because I think sometimes, you know, I think pushing that ahead or back in age, however you want to say it, to an earlier age really helps cover them before they go away to college. So so you don't forget to do it, right?
Right.
Which is so important. So any other vaccinations?
So teenagers are also eligible, and even down as young as 9 years of age, we can start doing the human papillomavirus series, or HPV, or the brand name is Gardasil. Mm-hmm. So that's to vaccinate against HPV, or human papillomavirus, several different types. And those viruses are responsible for a lot of different things. And so HPV causes a lot of, it can cause, you know, the basic warts that you get on your hands and your feet, but can also lead to certain things like cervical cancer, genital warts, oropharyngeal cancers in men and in women. So most adults at some point in their lives get HPV. Mm-hmm. We just don't know who's going to clear it and who's not. And so because we don't know those things, it's really important for us to vaccinate against the HPV virus, because we never know who's going to keep that virus in their body. And then that virus leads to changes in your cells that can eventually lead to cancer later on down the line. So when I talk to parents about that vaccine, that's how I talk about it. It's a cancer prevention thing. Mm-hmm. So it's very important. Right. And there's a lot more studies that have been out there. The HPV vaccine is actually older than the iPhone. So, you know, people say to me, well, it's just too new and I don't know enough about it. So think about that. We've all got these iPhones that we're hanging around all the time. So it's really not that new.
That's a great
analysis. It's been around for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Another topic I want to talk about, too, is, you know, school is right around the corner.
Yep.
Fall is right here. That means more sports
for
our adolescents, right? Especially football. What injuries do you see more often, and like what safety recommendations could you share?
So injuries are always going to be a risk in young adults. First off, their bodies aren't really fully developed. They're still, you know, their brains don't always make the best decisions, first off, because their brains really aren't completely fully developed either. But, you know, they're still developing good bone structure. They're still developing cartilage and things like that. And so you see things like bone injuries and fractures and cartilage injuries and ligament tears and things like that, because not everything is developed as much as it should be. I see a lot of injuries in sports because kids have protective equipment, but they're not using it the way they're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, kids running around on a soccer field, but they're not wearing shin guards. And so then they come in with an injury because they're not wearing what they're supposed to be wearing. So some of the injuries that I see come in are preventable, which is really upsetting. And I think we need to talk to the kids about the importance of wearing those things, and then the parents and coaches need to reinforce that and make them wear those things. You know, so if a kid goes out in the field and they're not wearing what they're supposed to be, then they're off that field until they put on the equipment they need to wear. So
And I think these are guidelines and rules that, you know, should be enforced by adults, right?
Absolutely.
Because we know as adults, I'm a little older than you are, that as we get older, when you have those traumatic injuries,
right,
you know, younger, it can affect you in adulthood, right, as we move forward, you know, and things like concussions.
Right.
And,
So one of the most common things that we see is concussions and mild traumatic brain injuries. And so, and especially in sports that you wouldn't even think about. So cheerleading actually is a very common sport for concussion. And so if you think about it, they have a much longer season. They're cheering for football and wrestling and basketball and things like that. So they're, and they're being thrown up in the air and they're hopefully being caught on the way back down, but there's a big potential for injury on the way up and the way back down. There's no helmets, there's no padding, there's no, there's very little there to protect them. And so I see a lot of injuries actually coming in from young people doing cheerleading sports and other stunting sports like that. So that's a big one. But every sport has a concussion risk. Even the ones that wear helmets and wear protective gear. So I think that's the big thing. So young brains are really susceptible to any kind of traumatic brain injury because they're not fully wired yet and they still have great connections that they need to make. And so the easiest way to understand a concussion is like a bruise on the brain. So you have that injury and basically your brain, for lack of a better term, sloshes forward and hits the front of your skull and then it will slosh back the other way. And so there's basically a bruise on the brain. And just like any other bruise that you would get in a sports injury, you need to rest it. And so after you've had that injury, you need to give yourself some time to recuperate and you need to make sure that you are, you know, you, the kids are out of the game and they're being honest about their symptoms. They need to be taken out of that game or that practice or something like that. And they need to be evaluated by a medical professional.
Right.
So they need to be seen in the doctor's office or be seen in the emergency room, depending on the severity. And then once that person has determined that it's okay to go back to activity, they need to start slowly and get back to their activity slowly.
That's, I mean, that's a key word, slowly.
It's huge.
It is.
If you,
it really is.
If you were to injure your knee, seriously, you would need physical therapy to get back to where you started. So the brain isn't any different than that.
Right.
You would need to start with just some basic aerobic exercise, walking or maybe some light jogging. And then sort of in a stepwise progression, advancing that further and further up.
Right.
You know, maybe doing some biking and then the next week maybe doing some drills in your particular sport. And then maybe the following week, you know, you're going to need to think about doing some non-contact participation and things like that and things to get your heart rate up and then getting into practice and then going back to your specific competition. It's not like I'm going to clear you for a concussion 2 days after you had the concussion and then you're going to be in the football game the following night.
Right.
That's not how it works. And I think parents and coaches need to understand that and players need to understand that. And we need to make sure that the parents and the coaches are paying close attention to their players and that they're not masking their symptoms and saying, no, I'm fine, so that they can get back to where they want to be.
Right. There need to be that honest, open communication between all of them,
Absolutely.
Which is so important.
You
know, you gave some really great recommendations about vaccinations, you know, about the sports injury and what to look for. But overall, we have about like less than 2 minutes left.
Sure.
Some healthy habits that adolescents can do to make their body stronger, right?
Yeah.
So they can play sports and they can stay healthy, right?
Yes. Get more sleep. So teenagers do have a different circadian rhythm than the rest of us. And there's good documentation and scientific data about that. So yes, there is a reason that they stay up later and they get up later than the rest of us. But should they be taking it to the extremes? No, absolutely not. So they need a good 8 to 9 hours of sleep every night. If they have to be on the bus by 7 o'clock, count backwards. That means they need to be in bed asleep by 10. And I think the most important thing is that there should not be any screen in that room with them because that's going to disturb their sleep. And the best thing that we can do as adults is model that same behavior.
Right.
We're all guilty of it. These tiny little boxes that we all stare at are very addictive, but we have to model good behavior if we want to raise good young adults.
Exactly.
And we all need to get more sleep.
I agree. In general. I agree. Yes. Yes.
And if that means you need to mm-hmm. set an alarm on mm-hmm. your little box that says it's time to go to bed.
Right. Right.
And it's time to put the phone down mm-hmm. and go to bed, and you need to do that. And if that's the way it's going to work in your family, great. If you need to turn off the Wi-Fi at 10 o'clock every night so that nobody can use it, then that's what you got to do.
Right,
but sleep is so important to so many things, to your physical health, to your mental health, to how much weight you can gain and lose. Like mm-hmm. sleep is so super important.
Right. And I think, again, for any age, which is so important.
Yes.
So unfortunately, we're just about out of time. Mm-hmm. Do you have any phone numbers? So if someone's out there and they need to establish with a pediatrician,
sure.
are there any phone numbers that you can give us?
Sure. Absolutely. So here in the Honesdale office, it's 570-253-5838. We have an office in the Waymart area, 570-488-9550. We have an office in the Lake Ariel, Sterling area. That's 570-689-7565. We have an office down in Pike Counties, 570-775-4264.
Wow. Yes, we got them all.
We did.
Well, Dr. Hellstern, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Absolutely.
I mean, great, great information. And I always learn a lot. So, again, this is Carol Kinnear, Community Relations Manager for Wayne Memorial Hospital. I want to thank you for listening and have a great day.